Die Podcast. Education and information.
Welcome to the latest drugs.ie podcast. This podcast features a recording of the recent RTE Radio 1 documentary, The Father's House. The documentary was produced by Susan Dennehy and is a tale of heroin, hurt and friendship.
I hated what he had become, but I loved him underneath. I wanted him to be better. I wanted him to be like the rest of the children in the neighbourhood, going to school or had a job and were planning their future, buying their first car or whatever it might have been. And he had none of that. And I couldn't see him having any of that. And that was destroying me as well.
Even the atmosphere when you walk into the house, you know, it was like a stale atmosphere, you know. You just didn't want to be... Well, I didn't want to be there. Mad thinking, you know, I want to get out. I'm going on the drink to show them, you know, to hurt them, to let them see how much they hurt me. Thanks to be to God I didn't, you know, because it would have been the next abortion on me wife, you know.
Yeah, came very close to skipping from me wife, who I worship. But we just went, we all going against one another on things. I was not focused on the person with the problem.
I thought drugs would never happen to us. Where we lived, I genuinely believed that, and I couldn't understand how people sort of allowed their kids to be drug addicts. Well, you know, I remember saying that, you know, if it happened to me, I'd start this, I'd do that. It was the biggest eye-opener to think that, you know, you couldn't do that. And then when it happened to me, I felt such guilt and shame.
This is the story of four men, Jimmy, Paul, Mousie and John. All of these men have a child addicted to heroin. None of these men would have met if Derek Jennings, a family support worker, hadn't pulled up outside their homes in his old Ford Transit van.
So where are we heading tonight, Derek?
Ringsend.
And what's the story down there tonight?
The story is, it's Drug Awareness Week down there. So we're going down to do our play, and hopefully we'll encourage more men stand up and get support. That's the basis of what the play was put together for in the first place, was the outreach to a lot of parents, men in particular. And we used the drama as an outreach tool to visit all the communities and let men see that men have feelings too.
I'd no idea that there was something wrong. I put it down to hormonal change and stuff like that. Because we were always a very, very close-knit family. Very, very close. Now, from a very early age, we had a system whereby in the house, we used to sit at this table every month, at this particular table. And if we wanted to talk about an issue, we discussed it. And we would put an ashtray. We smoked in the house at the time. We put an ashtray in front of us. And whoever had the ashtray in front of them could voice their opinion without any interruption. Which was a great thing, and it cleared the air for an awful lot of things.
It was my wife that knows more than me, yeah. I remember her one day calling me up to the room. It was my second eldest daughter, and she called me up to the room. She says, "Look at her." And she was like a biafran in the bed, yeah. Her bones was all sticking out and all. And the sickness I felt, yeah, just... I didn't know what to do. Things go through your mind, you know, drugs, AIDS, death. That's what comes into your mind, yeah?
She denied everything. She denied everything. But as I said, we found the signs, the tin foil, the lighters, the usual. The spoon's gone missing. And I was actually coming in from work. And I was coming down the estate. And I seen her on the stairwell over here. And I just walked over, her and another girl. And I seen her eating the spoon with the drugs on it. I was devastated. I couldn't believe my daughter go because, as I say to you, she's seen I was so anti-drugs. I don't know whether it was a rebellious streak in her or what.
She was top of her class in school. Seriously, now, really good in school. We had no idea when she went on drugs. We spoke to her since, and she actually went on drugs in school. She walked in during one lunch break into the school, and there was two girls, and one of them, and they said, "That's okay, it's only my daughter," like, you know. So she asked what they were doing, you know, and they were smoking heroin on tin foil with a tube of a burrow, you know. So she said, "Give us a shot of it," or whatever, or they offered her a shot, and she just took it and never stopped then for years after that. She was only 14, turning 15 at that stage. And just then another parent came and asked about her and asked, could you ask your daughter not to be coming near her daughter? They were both involved in drugs at the time. So that was the first that we knew about it.
Play came about probably 4.5, 5 years ago. We were looking at ways of doing some outreach and to raise the awareness of father support, because not enough men were engaging in services. We held a seminar in Osmond House in Mountjoy Square. The name of the seminar was Go Tell Your Ma, and the reason it was called Go Tell Your Ma was because in a lot of the cases when fathers were approached with a problem, we says, "Tell your ma, I don't know, tell your ma." We had a couple of workshops, and some of the ideas that come up out of the workshop was, you know, put on the back of a beer, ma, or do a piece of drama and go around all the community centres. So I went back and asked the group, "Would you be interested in doing a piece of drama?" And they nearly fainted. They actually thought I was on drugs. And one of the ways for it to succeed was I was actually going to take part in it myself. And I said, "Look, I'll do a witches week." And they're asking us to do something, you know, that I wouldn't do. Still a lot of reluctance, and you know, just not known and all that kind of stuff. So what we done was, we had a venue and we said, "Look, what we'll just explore and we'll put our ideas together and see what we can come up with." So I spent the next few weeks encouraging and persuading, getting them to take part in it. So eventually we come up with a story. So I just said to Robbie, "We need sort of to nail a nail, like, they're at the bite in the bay. So we need to put a date on it now." So, and that's what we've done. I think it was the 29th of June 2004.
Within a few months then, she up and ran away from home. Left school. We did everything we could. Went everywhere we could. Went to the police. At this stage she was 16 years of age, and there was nothing they said they could do for us.
We tried everything. We travelled everywhere. I brought her to Cork tomorrow, my wife's brother. He said he'd take her to get her away from the drugs. I used to travel then once a week to Cork to her, and I'd stay the weekend with her. Great for a couple of weeks. She robbed from him. Made her way back to Dublin. She was on the street. She wouldn't come in because she knew she'd stolen from him, that we were going to find out. So she... eventually, she did knock at the door one night. And it was, as they say, tough love. You have to say, get yourself started. We'll be there for you. You know we'll always be there for you.
I used to go around on the soup runs at night time and asked, have you seen this girl? Have you seen, you know? And got to know other users, and then they eventually said, yeah, we'll tell her. Now, I was giving them a few bob for them to tell me, but at this stage, I really thought I have to save my young one, you know? So I eventually found where she was in this house. It was an old derelict tenement house on the quays, on the north side of the quays, up near the new bridge and up Ben Burm Street and that type of thing. It was an old derelict house. So in order to get into this house, I watched and I could see they used to get over and down into the area, basement area, and there was some bars missing on a window and they used to squeeze through it. And then, as you can see, I'm a fairly large fella. But don't ask me how, but I squeezed through these bars, right? And just with a lighter, I went looking round, and there must have to be 30 or 40 drug addicts in all the rooms, from the basement area right up through the top three, four floors, in different rooms, all doing their thing. And I was running around, going in and out, calling out her name, and these people were just saying, you know, F off, piss off, well, you know, threatening, just get out of here. And I'm screaming her name continuously. I just wanted. And eventually I found her in a room in a basement area with just a door shoved across, a big door shoved across a smaller opening. And they used to bar themselves in because, although they were all in the one position, they would all rob each other and everything, you know. So, and I just got her out of there that time, brought her home, and my wife then, we just brought her home, and we had dinner, and we went out to dinner and tried to talk, but all she wanted to do was to get back.
Tell me where we are first.
We're in RDRD. It's Ringsend Response to Drugs. We're in the Spellman Centre.
Okay. Yeah. And the play is on here tonight.
The play is on here tonight. Yeah, it's part of the Drug Awareness Week for Ringsend.
This is Robbie Bourne, who's the community development worker with Community Response, who would have been responsible for actually putting this piece of drama together and structuring it and working with the men.
Well, I'll follow you. There's a lovely courtyard out here.
There is, yeah. It's really nice.
Oh, wow, isn't this lovely?
It's gorgeous, yeah. Lovely evening.
Robbie, can I talk to you just for a few minutes about your role?
Yeah.
In the Minute Work play?
Yeah.
So what's your take on the process and what was your part in it?
Well, I suppose the process is really an integration of community development and drama, whereby people get to tell their stories in a very authentic way, because the script is based on the role plays that they come up with themselves.
What's your first memory of meeting the men who are in the drama tonight?
My first memory was the night Derek asked me to go out to see the Fathers of Addicts group and to talk to them about what a piece of drama would be like. And that was basically me having a chat with them in the room, taking notes on what their concerns were and explaining to them the way that I worked. I think probably with all groups of people, especially launching into drama for the first time, they're always extremely, extremely nervous. I mean, what I remember really mostly was that there was a lot of laughter, and there were a lot of tears as well. At times, we stopped when it became too difficult, because the exercises allowed people to get into emotional spaces which they may have not been before, or if they were, they were on their own with it.
I think if you've seen the drama, I'm actually counting bottles. And I say, where's all your mates? Well, that shit happened to me. That genuinely happened to me. I was into schoolboy football in a big way. And I got away from that. And if the friends I had made, I thought they were talking about me. So I wouldn't talk to them. And even if they'd say to me, how's the daughter? I'd say, what the F do you want to know for? So the consequences of that was they shied away from me. So I wouldn't go out. I just stopped going out then. So I used to get drink and sit here and just drink myself into a stupor. I'd sit on my own.
Nobody wants to admit defeat, basically, and to admit that you couldn't look after your children, that you were responsible for their behaviour. So we shied away from our neighbours. We shied away from... Our social life just went out the window. It didn't happen anymore. Like, I created situations myself, I know I did, with people that I was friendly with, so that I could avoid them. Created arguments, not huge arguments, but just, I created a rift so that such a body wouldn't phone me anymore because of that. I know I did. With quite a few people. Because I was ashamed and embarrassed. I didn't want to talk to them. I didn't want, if they did know, I didn't want them to say, I'm very sorry. I didn't want any of that. I certainly didn't want to tell my parents because they were elderly and my father wasn't in great health and I didn't want to burden him with something else. So it was a long, long time. It was a number of years before I actually told them.
You go around the haze. And that haze goes on for years, you know, because you can't trust anymore. While we were going through that, then my eldest son started dabbling in heroin, you know. So we three of them here in the house, and then that's when the turmoil started, really. And it came to a stage when my daughter, she had a child afterwards, you know, and she was living here, and my wife couldn't cope with what was going on. She said, either she goes or I go. And I let my wife go, you know, because I didn't want to put my daughter out and the grandchild, you know. And that's the way it was. We weren't with each other, you know, as such. Emotionally, we weren't, because I was taking sides, you know. And my wife left for a couple of weeks. I came home one day and my daughter was gone. And I said, but I have to go out to work and pay bills and I'll let your mother, you know, their mother walk away. And here I am with no one now. And I can't go to work because I have to mind the granddaughter. Yeah, and that was the selfish part and that sort of opened my eyes, yeah.
How long have you been in this flat now, Mercy?
In this flat, I think we're 23 years, Susan.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Who lives here at the moment?
Myself, my wife, and my young grandson.
And you were saying you got custody of him recently?
Yeah.
That's great.
We were thrilled with that, yeah, thrilled.
And you see a difference in him?
Oh, big time. Yeah.
At the top of the world here, Marcy.
Oh, the penthouse. My grandson's coming up here one night and there was two syringes and fair play to him. He come up to me, Susan, and he said, Granddad, there's two syringes on. I said, you didn't put your hands near them, did you? He was able to tell us about the glass pipes for this crack cocaine. That's what she was using. But the final straw, the reason we went to take custody of him, we brought him to Spain for 3 weeks with us. We always bring them away. We're going on holidays, won't leave them now. And while we were away, my daughter stole his computer his computer games. And he had hundreds. She sold a whole lot.
His man?
His old man, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. And we cracked up when we heard it. Said, what? How low is she going to go? Terrible, you wouldn't talk. It's the two-legged ones, right? Each and every one of them. As humans, they deal drugs.
Those boys down there playing football?
Yeah, they deal it. None of them are addicts. They're not addicts. This guy here is not an addict.
And the others there?
They take drugs. As I said to you, later on there'll be maybe 20 torches, and they all gather on this corner here. That's where they gather. We've a 10-year-old girl up here, and we found out who the taxi driver was. He used to bring the drugs in a taxi, and he had a list, and he'd give it to the 10-year-old girl with the names that she used to give the drugs to and collect the money, so he wouldn't be seen doing the deals. We got the taxi driver, we got his number, we reported him to the taxi firm, we went to the police about him. We don't know what happened to him, but we were just glad that we got the 10-year-old girl away from it. She's a lovely girl. She lives over there. The door that's open there. She lives over there. She'll have him come over and ask my wife, does she need anything in the shop? So, you know, she's a lovely girl. But there was a road she could have been going there. I think back to my daughter, and I say, that could be my girl again, you know?
Was there a low point? Was there something that you could look at now and say that was the worst moment?
For me?
As a dad?
As a dad. I suppose the absolute feeling of helplessness, of not being able to do anything, and realising that no matter what you tried, no matter what you said, no matter what you tried to set up for recovery units or trying to see counsellors and facilitators of groups, and only realising that your son or your daughter are the only person that can actually give up the drugs themselves because they want to. I mean, I asked my son at one stage, why are you taking drugs? And he told me, because he likes them. And I think that was the realisation for me that I had absolutely no chance. That I had no chance of controlling my son's addiction and him getting off drugs. It was down to him. And it was devastating for me, because I knew then that I would help him in every way, shape and form, but there was nothing I could do unless he wanted to do it himself.
In the play we describe when somebody goes back on drugs and I'll just get it out anyway. It brings back memories, all right. I think when she went back on it the second time, that was the right kick in the teeth we got. That was the lowest time for us. So there's always little signs that show when they're going, that kind of, and you're trying to ignore them, you know. Might be something might go missing or something, and you're hoping that it's not the same thing starting over again. That comes out a lot, you know, with the lads in the group. You know, they'd say, geez, I couldn't find my camera. And I went, you know, something like that you might use every few months, looking for the camera to go away for a weekend, and all of a sudden you can't find the camera. And that might be a pointer to any other things are going as well. And then they all start adding up to the kid being back on the care again, you know.
Very few parents will actually show up at any treatment centre and ask for help. It's always in relation to their child. You know, they don't actually come in and say, listen, you know, I have a child on drugs, can you help me? It's always in relation to getting something done for that child. You know, you have to treat this very, very gently. you know, and saying, look, you know, you think you need support yourself, like, around the whole situation, and then you throw in a few little spanners in the works, and, you know, like, asking about the non-drug using kids of the home, how are they, and, you know, to tell it around and say, like, what's it like for them to have a sister on drugs or a brother on drugs, and, you know, so you're throwing in little spanners there, and they're like little bullet points of awareness, and, like, you know, they're going, oh, didn't think of that one, didn't look like that, you know, maybe we do need a bit of help around the situation. So it was that kind of session with them that, you know, I used that approach, was just little bullet points of awareness, and eventually, you know, they came back down to me, and, you know, the rest has been history, like, you know.
Good friend of my wife was talking to her, and she come up to see me, and I was in a bad way, and she never said anything, but she went to see Derek Jennings, the drugs counsellor. And when he come up and knocked out, I didn't know him, what a fright, I didn't know who he was. I had a house coat on me, my pyjamas, pair of slippers and 12 cans of Guinness around me. And he just sat and told me who he was. That he said, I'm not talking to you now. He said, you've alcohol on you. He said, I'll be up here tomorrow. He said, I want to see you showered, shaved, no drink. And we'd have a chat. So I said, what have I to lose? He came up to me the next day and he said to me, I'm not here to help your daughter. I'm here to help you, Mousy. And he asked me to step back and take a look at my own lifestyle, which was a bit of a, oh, yeah, I know where he's coming from and how he means. I was like, get myself addicted to a drug, a legalised drug. But at the same time, I realised I was as bad, that this wasn't going to solve anything. I wasn't helping my wife, my other children, or the person with the addiction. I was no help. So he called me. He said, would you come out and have a chat with me? Could you make your way out to Clondalkin and to me? So I got the bus out, told me where to meet him. I thought it was a clinic, you know, you went on one-to-one. And I walked in, there was 12 men sitting there. I said, what's this? So immediately he introduced me to Evan. This is Mousy, said to him. Well, they started talking football and different things. Then eventually Derek had torn and he'd possibly say, well, Mousy, how'd your weekend go? And it was such a relaxed feeling. And the guys could relate to me. I could relate to them.
When I went in, and I'd heard people talking, you know, one son, two sons, a daughter. And what they were saying, they were telling my story, you know, and how they feel, they were able to express it, where I couldn't, you know. And I went for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, before I said anything, really. And then when I did, I just couldn't shut up. It just flowed out of me, you know. A lot of it was emotional, yeah. It was just bottled up inside, you know, and I was able to talk. And when I did talk, it didn't feel as bad, you know, because it didn't feel as if I was the only father that had three kids on drugs and not able to cope, you know.
And when did you realise that the group was making a difference?
What happened was, it was coming up to his 21st birthday, and I was lying through my teeth making up stories that he was working in the country, because I did have him working with me on a project, and that didn't pan out. My mother was talking about the 21st birthday party that my son was going to have, but I knew the 21st birthday party was never going to happen because my son wasn't home with us. And I said, I'm going to tell my parents. Got into the car and drove over Northside and told my parents. And the three of us sat in the front room crying. And the weight that was lifted off my shoulders.
What did they say?
They woke me and kissed me and told me they were there for me. There for my family. And that was when I turned everything around then. Well, everything was turned around for me as a result of that.
Hey, John.
How are you feeling before the play? Are you nervous?
No, usually we have the crack, we rehearse and we mess and all.
Yeah.
But when it comes to stepping outside, then
we were rehearsing one night, right? And we had to walk out and do this piece, right? You know, walk out, say, Father. And we all came out and said, I'm a little teapot.
Short and stout.
And Robbie went mad, you know, because at the time we were definitely really? Trying to. We did some crazy things like that.
Oh, right? Swear to God.
Behind that curtain, we did have some crack as well.
It's enjoyable, and it's, I mean,
we're giving something back as well, though, you know. I think that's the way I look at it, you know.
Like, we get
I've often said sometimes, Jason, this is still going on. We're only supposed to do this once. How long, 3 or 4 years later, and we're still doing
it's what? It's we don't in 04 and we're in 09 now. Do you know what I mean?
What? It was 5 years, isn't it? Enough.
Nearly 5 years, yeah.
At the father's group one night, and Derek said, well, boys, how do you feel about doing a bit of drama? And we know where we told him to go. Ah, no, we wouldn't go for it. So, after about a few months, he came back to us and he asked us just to do the one. So, Robbie got involved then. He was a drugs counsellor. And he listened to our stories. We were all telling him what things that had happened and the whole lot. And they got together, and it is our story, because all Robbie did was tape us. And he wrote the scripts, and we'd go out every Tuesday night for 2.5 hours in rehearse, and it was wonderful, it was great. That feeling of comradeship, oh, it was absolutely marvellous. I remember the first one we done was down in off Francis Street, and we were all terrified. We were terrified. But it went well. And there was actually, the five of us were close to tears. We just got grabbed on and on the stage when it was over because we were so scared. But it went so well. Marvellous feeling. It's one of the best feelings I've ever had because I didn't realise that they were so scared. And I was that, you know, I was scared, but they were the same.
It's the next best thing to a miracle, to get five men to get up on stage and talk about their lives, talk about their feelings, their issues, the way they cried, you know, the way they neglected the non-drug using kids at the home, the way they neglected their partners, the way they weren't men. They were men, but they never took the role of being a man and shared the responsibilities within a home. You know, they didn't do that. They woke late, they went to the pub, they come in, giving out hell, get that junkie out of the house, and you're always the same. You know, only for you he's like this and this and that. And they never took the role on, you know. And I think the group, you know, has given them a lot of responsibilities, stand up and own the responsibilities. And to be fairness, I haven't let them away with much in challenging their behaviour throughout, you know, the process of them being in the support group, you know. I mean, sometimes they've, you know, done the blame game, but I've always made them stand up and take responsibility for what they're responsible for, you know, without shifting the blame to their partner, you know, or going drinking because their son is on drugs. If their son is using substance to help him cope with what's going on for him, you know, why are they doing the same? You know, and like you'll hear, oh, well, I'm working all week and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, you know, and I just kept putting them straight back on their laps. If you don't have the tools to fix a car, you're never going to fix it. And if you don't have the tools, you know, to cope with a situation, it's really hard to cope with, you know. So, like, they didn't know how to cope. You know, they thought by coping the way they are as men, you know, these big, strong, angry, tough men would solve the problem. You know, it didn't work. And it doesn't work. You know, so... So it was a long, 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 long road. You know? And we are now arriving at the Spellman Centre in Ringsend to do men at work. And there's Robbie over there.
I hated me kids. For being on drugs. I hate them, I couldn't look at them, I couldn't stand them. And still I couldn't understand why I had all this emotion and I'm feeling for them. Yeah. And it was explained to me up in the thing. It's all right to hate them. You know, it's all right to hate them for what they're doing. You don't hate the person, you hate the drug. And when that was explained to me, you know, and what you're feeling is love, but you hate what they're doing, you don't hate them. And that had to be explained to me. You know, I don't like the addict, but I love my child. Yeah. And through all that, I have four kids. Yeah. I have four kids. I have another young lad that never took drugs, that never gave me any problems, never brought the police to the door. And I've not been talking here and never said a word about him. Yeah. Because the addicts took up everything. Everything.
It's taken 10 years off my life, my wife's life, and both my sons' lives. Without a doubt. Last summer we became grandparents for the first time, which we're over the moment, and everything is good at the moment, touch wood. And all I can hope for is that it remains that way.
But my God, it was the best con job that was ever done. For me, my wife, and my other two children. Because my daughter turned one night and said, I was in the bedroom getting changed, and she didn't realise I was in there. This is my youngest girl. I was going to the group about 6 weeks at this stage. And she said, Mom, isn't it great to have me real dad back again? And that was the best thing that could have been said to me. That was wonderful for me. I come out and I just hugged her. Because I'd missed out. My relationship, oh, she's a diamond.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're all very welcome. The reason we're doing this piece of drama is to outreach to fathers and to families who are affected by drug use. So we'll forward ahead and enjoy.
Thank you.
Terry told me once, one of the lads said, Jason, isn't it all the same, isn't it lucky that our kids went on drugs? So Terry says, how do you make that out? He says, well, if they hadn't gone on drugs, none of us would have met. You know, which is true as well.
I've often been driving through and say, you know, coming up to the house and seeing the door and just wishing it disappear, or I could disappear, because I wouldn't know what to expect when I walked into the house. I just didn't want to be there. You know,
takes over your whole fucking life, Moose.
It certainly does, it consumes you.
Sometimes you don't even get to your fucking hall door. You go elsewhere, you know.
Maybe a lot of men go to pub, we don't know.
I know one thing, Mousy, when you come in here tonight, you said you weren't going to talk.
Now you won't shut fucking up.
I didn't think it'd be disease, or I feel very relaxed.
You've taken a first step. It's the first day for the rest of your life.
Look out! Now work!
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.
Drugs.ie podcast.
Education and information.